Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Into our second hour of the program, we're about an hour out from the start of the Gas House Gang. That's going to roll your way tonight and every weekday evening at 8 o'clock, barring sports play-by-play. We'll have it for you. On Mondays, it's always Kevin Wheeler, me, Tom Ackerman, Bernie Miklas, and then the other 4 days of the week, it's some combination of the two of us. I believe I'm with you on Wednesday with Tom this week, and then Friday with Bernie and those three other guys. We'll have the other couple days between combinations of those two. I don't want to give too much away from our conversation tonight, but I'm doing this in reverse. I kind of want to jump off something that we talked about tonight, and you'll hear the full conversation later on. But I have made the point over and over and over ad nauseum when we talk about the Cardinals. I've made the point that I think from an offensive standpoint and from a starting pitching standpoint, if everything happens the way we kind of expect it to happen, that I'm comfortable with the group being at least as good as they were this past year moving forward. I think there is a clear pathway towards them being a better run-scoring team even without Paul Goldschmidt and, say, Nolan Arenado, who seems likely to be traded. Now, that hinges upon the idea of Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman taking steps forward. And that's not guaranteed, but I think those guys are too good to not be able to harness something. And I am the thing I believe in most right now with the Cardinals is that this offseason is going to be an offseason of them bringing in really good people. They started with Chaim Bloom, not this offseason. He's been around a little bit longer. And then to bring in somebody like Rob Serfolio, and I'm excited about the Brant Brown hiring. When you start to dig in on him a little bit more, I get more and more excited about that, and they're going to continue to bring in smart people. And smart people inside of an organization have the ability to make players better. So there's not a guarantee that Nolan Gorman's going to get better. There's not a guarantee that Jordan Walker's going to get better. But if these, you know, we've seen players leave St. Louis time and time and time and time again and go be better somewhere else. Well, I am of the belief, and we can revisit this a year from now, 2 years from now. Hopefully I'm talking to you on this station for a very, very, very long time. We can revisit this as the years move forward. I don't think that's going to be a thing quite as much anymore. I think the Cardinals are going to have a really good infrastructure where they're going to help players become, again, that best version of themselves. So offensively and from a starting pitching standpoint, I'm very comfortable with where it's going to be. Where I'm not comfortable, and this goes off the assumption that Ryan Helsley is going to get moved, and that's not a guarantee. There was, in the reports coming out of San Antonio at the GM meetings last week, they certainly indicated that maybe this foregone conclusion that Helsley was going to get traded, that it maybe was not as much of a foregone conclusion as some of us in the media have made it out to be. I still think Helsley is likely to get traded. And that's the area that concerns me, the bullpen. Because while I can see an offensive group that can score more runs than they scored this past season, even without Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado, as I look at a starting pitching group that can, from an aggregate standpoint, put up better numbers or as good of numbers, even without Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn, it's harder for me to see a bullpen group that can be as successful, as effective as what the Cardinals bullpen group was this year, anchored by Ryan Helsley, if they do not have Helsley. The first question would be, who's the first guy who gets the opportunity to be the team's closer? And I can just imagine that even before the season got started, it would start out as a closer by committee, and you see who takes the job. And look, they got guys. They've got JoJo Romero. They've got, you know, Ryan Fernandez is somebody who could certainly take another step forward. Watching Matthew Liberatore go through a full season working out of the bullpen and perhaps being that high leverage reliever, you know, right from Jump Street, and not futzing around with him going from being a starter to a reliever to being an opener on a bullpen game. Like, just don't do any of that stuff and just let him be a final three innings close and late guy. Well, I think he's got the opportunity to be a really special relief pitcher in there. But even with those guys, and I like all those guys, they're not going to lock down as many leads late with that group there at the end of a game. And that's the question. That's the if Ryan Helsley goes away and this team does outperform what they did last year offensively and from a starting pitching standpoint, what did the bullpen look like? Now, I'll also say this. I'm not trying to invoke fear. And look, the Cardinals bullpen, I don't know if people realize just how good it was this year. When you look at what their run differential was and what their record should have been, the Cardinals won as many games as they won this year. The strongest part of their team was the bullpen, and it was anchored by Ryan Helsley. And Andrew Kittredge obviously was a big part of that as well. Indications are that Kittredge probably won't be back, but that's not a guarantee. I know John Mozeliak was on with Tom on Sports on a Sunday Morning yesterday, and John kind of Mozeliak stopped himself in the middle of his thought almost because he doesn't talk about free agents, but it seems like there's at least some desire to maybe bring in Andrew Kittredge back. Kittredge's going to have an opportunity possibly to go make a lot of money. He had a really, really good season. And if there are teams out there that are very interested in him, then he should go get his pay. This might be his only opportunity in his big league career to go get a big-time payday. And if that's sitting out there for him, go get it and be thankful that you had the year that you had with the Cardinals. But if it's not there, is there a scenario where he's back with the Cardinals on a one-year deal and you try again next year? You know, the thing that's kind of hanging out there right now is I really think spending is going to be down mostly across Major League Baseball. And it's connected to the TV situation. I can't repeat this too many times. The fact that the Cardinals are only getting a 23% reduction in local TV rights by staying with Bally, now FanDuel, that's about as good of a situation as any team is going to be out there. For all those teams that dropped Bally and are going to do their own thing for, what is it, the Twins and the Brewers, and the Rangers are looking at local TV stuff, so they don't really count. But the teams that are just going to be producing it themselves the way the Padres do, the way the Diamondbacks do, those teams are going to have a more extreme hit when it comes to their local TV money. The Cardinals losing at 23%, plus the fact that you have added an added revenue channel coming in with legalized gambling. The Cardinals are probably in about as good of a shape in that area as just about any team out there that's been connected to Bally. One sidebar on that really quickly, and I'm not trying to begin put the fear of whoever in you, but Major League Baseball and the Atlanta Braves petitioned against the bankruptcy filing of Diamond Sports Group, which would allow FanDuel Sports Network to continue to exist. So for them to continue to exist, they have to come out of bankruptcy where the court approves their plan going forward. And the Braves, who were the first team that they basically kept the contract on, plus Major League Baseball, has already told the bankruptcy judge that they are opposing the plan. So we've talked so much about what's going to happen moving forward with the TV situation. I think the Cardinals are going to end up being on FanDuel Sports Network, and it's all going to kind of work itself out. But this situation is not over yet, because now the court has to listen to Major League Baseball and the Atlanta Braves on that situation. But the point I'm trying to get to, there are, whether it's Andrew Kittredge or whether it's another relief pitcher, when spending is down and there's many free agent relievers out there as there's going to be, we're going to be 2 weeks out from spring training, and there's going to be a ton of pretty good relief pitchers out there that can be had for a low number. And I would suspect that, especially if the Cardinals are somewhat in a similar place as they were in this past year and they still want to compete at least a little bit, that likely they could play in that area, especially as we get closer to spring training. All right, we got to talk some Mizzou football. We'll talk a little more Blues hockey. Our good friend Daniel Esteve from Fox 2, he's going to join us in just a moment. This is a Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We take you till 8 o'clock after in our next segment, 7:30, 7:35 or so. We're going to talk with Tom Ackerman. We'll talk Slew Bilkins basketball with him. In addition to being the KMOX Sports Director, he is now the TV voice of Bilkins basketball. Right now, very happy to go to the guest line, and we welcome in a guy that you see in here on Fox 2 and at Channel 11. He is Daniel Esteve. Follow him on Twitter at Daniel J. Esteve. Always great to be able to talk to him. Daniel, how are you?
Matt, you know, when your people called my people about being on your program this evening, I almost question it because of how well you've been doing in my fantasy football league. So I almost questioned it, but I can't miss out an opportunity to chat with you.
I'm not doing well this week, though, and you beat me 2 weeks ago. So I had a hot start. I'm starting to fall back a little bit here lately.
Are you telling me that I'm responsible for the fall-off of the great Matt Pauley?
Well, let's also be very clear. You're the guy that when you were up by like a half a point going into Monday Night Football with your kicker, you benched your kicker just to make sure you didn't get a negative point and you didn't end up accidentally losing that game.
You know, the analytics department over with the St. Louis Cardinals would tell me to do a move like that. So I figured if they would recommend it, it's got to be the right thing to do, right?
I guess so. You got the win. That's all that really matters. All right, so you're a Mizzou guy. What do you take away from that game? I mean, that was 3.5 quarters of kind of just junk, and then all of a sudden, basically in like 3-4 minutes, they put it all together. They have one great play. They end up winning. This is a 7-2 SEC team that nobody feels good about, but they just keep winning games.
They do keep winning games, and I say this all while wearing a Mizzou t-shirt, so take that with a grain of salt and take that as you want it. But in all reality, I was one of the people that maybe wasn't as high, and perhaps that's just to protect myself, on the Missouri Tigers, even when they were doing well earlier in the season. I think the reality has to set in at some point that Oklahoma has not been a good football team. So from an actual football perspective, how excited can you be about that win? Probably not that excited. However, given the storylines, the injuries, Brady Cook out, the amount that Mizzou Nation built that game up for, there's a lot of pressure there. So you have to give credit at the very least to this Mizzou Tiger team on the intangibles, kind of being able to step up big in a big environment, even if it's not the stiffest competition.
What, when you watch that game, what happens that allows them to score all those points late?
I think faith, trust, and pixie dust a little bit in there, right? You got to make some of it. I mean, hey, throw the ball up there and see what happens. You've got Theo East, Luther Burden. You know, Coach Drinkwitz in the postgame talked a lot about how, hey, at halftime we had them right where we wanted them. And we were going to play slow and establish the run, and then we were going to hit them through the air in the second half. I mean, in all reality, Drew Pine didn't even throw for 200 yards in that ball game. It's not like it was an air raid offense that absolutely dominated, and it took some huge third down conversions on the part of Drew Pine to even give the Tigers a chance. So, honestly, aside from some really poor turnovers on the part of the Oklahoma Sooners offense, you have to give credit to the Mizzou defense for the most part. Yes, the offense had some big moments, but Mizzou defense allowed them to stay in that ballgame as long as they did.
Bad news coming down the line over the last couple hours. The redshirt junior offensive lineman, Connor Tolleson, really one of the top centers in the nation, going to be out for the rest of the season with a knee injury. That's just another thing that hurts this team.
It really does, and the injury list is about as big as a grocery list or a novel at this point. It just continues to grow. Obviously, you have the opportunity to potentially get your starting quarterback back. That's going to be priority number one. But an offensive line, if it's not right, it doesn't matter who you have at quarterback. The reality, though, is, and this is something I posed to Drinkwitz after the game, and he didn't take to, not kindly, just kind of ignored the question for the most part. There are five SEC teams with two losses, three with one loss, zero unbeaten SEC teams. You've got three games left in this season. You are very much in the hunt. So I don't care how you're playing. It's late in the season. You've got a chance. Anything can happen. Anything also hurts you, and losing offensive linemen is a big blow.
That's funny because in his post-game conversation, he talked about, you know, still alive for the college football playoff, which doesn't seem like a likely thing, but depending on the way things, if you win out and you go 10-2 and some other things happen, then at least you're going to get a look.
1,000%. And not only that, but on national radio today, he goes on the SEC Network and says, oh, yeah, I think if you win 10 wins in the SEC, you should automatically qualify for the college football playoff, or you should qualify for the college football playoff. I mean, where was that energy? The only energy I got was, no, we don't care about anything but South Carolina. South Carolina is the complete focus of this football team. And don't get me wrong, it should be. South Carolina has been very impressive lately. And Mizzou clearly has some issues that they need to address heading into that matchup. But you've got to be hyped with the position you've put yourself in, especially after a win against Oklahoma. Because you lose that game, you're talking about the fact that you got to start building for next season, because this one, for the most part, given what people hoped you would do, is over at that point if you lose to Oklahoma.
You are so bitter about the answer you got, aren't you?
I'm a little frustrated. Don't get me wrong. I'm not in Columbia every weekend, so I'm not a familiar face to Eli Drinkwitz. And Martin Kilcoyne put it very eloquently today. As far as a coach that can give you a great bite, good, bad, middle, Eli Drinkwitz is pretty box office in that regard. And he had some great bites in that post-game press conference. So I can't complain too much. At least you're not getting high and dry. You're just not necessarily getting the bite that you're looking for. It's always going to be entertaining, though.
All right, before we let you go, you're like the most positive guy I know, and I love that about you. Put a positive spin on the St. Louis Blues right now.
The St. Louis Blues. I'll tell you what. I was at skate this morning and got the chance to talk to Braden Shen and Drew Bannister, for that matter. And the common sentiment, and it's just crazy to me, the common sentiment is if they can figure out some line change issues, it will solve a lot of their problems. Line change issues is going to solve a lot of problems. Now, listen, Matt, you know I am not the authority when it comes to hockey. I just report what I hear. But if you're telling me that you are just little nitpicking fixes away from being competitive, I'll take that and I will run with that to the heavens. Line changes has been a focal point for the Blues. If they can start to tighten that up, it's going to help on the offensive end. It's going to help with the forecheck. It's going to help with all of it. And hopefully we can see a revamped Blues team. And just to sprinkle in something on the top, if you can just hang around and get Robert Thomas back, you get a superstar and a great player at that, great human being at that, I think anything can happen.
I'm glad you brought that up, because we played that audio earlier. We heard some of your questions that you presented earlier today. And I chuckled in the moment because they're coming off an 8-1 loss where there's basically post-game comments that some of the players on the team quit, and the top thing that was talked about was line changes. So that, to me, I chuckle at that more than anything else.
I was scratching my head a little bit too, and needed some context. Braden Shen provided a bit more for me, but you know, at the end of the day, they're in a tough situation. I think a true, in all seriousness, saving grace for the Blues is coming into the season. I think we all understood that with how much they offloaded last season, they put themselves in a position to still be relevant to a certain degree, but with a focus on building for the future, something that a lot of Cardinals fans would like to see the Cardinals do. And I think the Blues are sticking with that. And right now, you do have a lot of young talent in and around the system. You've got to be optimistic in general for the future, even if it means a couple bleak moments in the present day.
In addition to your work with Channel 2 and Channel 11, you've got the Wembley's Game soccer podcast. If folks are soccer fans, they should be listening to that. What's the best way to get to it?
Oh, Spotify, Wembley's Game with Daniel Stever. We're coming up on our 50th episode, which I am so excited about. I was so hesitant, and this is what I tell a lot of young journalists. Don't be hesitant to produce your own content if you're passionate about it. I was so hesitant to jump into it, and I thought to myself, well, if I could just get a couple friends that would lend me their time, I think it would make it worth a listener's while to hear that conversation. And to think at this point I've got 44 episodes out, that means 44 friends have been generous enough to give me their time. It's the best thing about the podcast.
Well, we appreciate you giving us some of your time, and we will ask you again in the very near future, I'm sure.
Always available for you, Matt. Great chatting with you.
Awesome. That's Daniel Esteve, Fox 2, Channel 11, the Wembley's Game Soccer Podcast. Follow him on Twitter at Daniel J. Esteve. And every time he drops a new podcast or has a great story, he always puts it right there. So great stuff. By the way, so Tamar Scher, and we'll talk about this with Tom Ackerman in a few moments. Tamar was doing the sidelines for the Billikens broadcast yesterday with Tom, and Daniel was retweeting Tamar's stuff. You know, one's a Channel 2, one's a Channel 4, but that's the kind of guy that Daniel is, always looking for everybody to do awesome things, and that's one of the reasons. I can just tell you, I like telling people about good people, and I can tell you that Daniel Esteve, he is as good of a person as there is out there. So when you watch him at night on Channel 2, you go, you know what? I heard that guy's a pretty good guy. You know, sometimes we see a celebrity, you're like, wonder if that person's a good guy. I bet they're nice. I bet that person's an a-hole. Well, if you're ever doing that with Daniel Esteve, you can know. You know what? I heard that guy's a pretty good guy. Another good guy, Tom Ackerman. He joins us next on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. The Sloomans basketball team picking up their first win of the Josh Schertz era yesterday as they knock off Vila, a non-D1, 95-44. In addition to being the KMOX sports director, he is also now the TV voice of St. Louis Billikens basketball on FanDuel Sports Network Midwest. He is our good friend Tom Ackerman, and he joins us right now. Tom, thanks for the time, and congratulations on the new gig. Very, very, very cool.
Matt, I appreciate it. Good to talk to you, and it has been great. We had a really good time yesterday calling the game. Have a great team there with Troy Robertson as my analyst, and the sideline reporter is none other than Tamar Scher of KMOV. And then, you know, to have the backing of a producer like Brian Shapiro, who does Cardinals games, Nick Thompson, the director of the Cardinals games. It's an awesome crew with a lot of familiar faces working behind the scenes.
That little Indiana connection between you and Tamar.
Yeah. Tamar Scher was one of my, I call her my 5-star recruit. I gave her a tour of the IU Media School back in the day when it was just becoming well established. I'm good friends with her dad, Howie Scher. And kind of swayed that I didn't need a lot of swaying because her dad went to IU, but kind of explained to them what the IU Media School is all about. She went through 4 years there, did an incredible job, and, you know, went to Evansville to do TV for the NBC affiliate. KMOV hired her, and she is ascending quickly. So yes, it was nice to have all the IU folks together. There were some other IU people over there, too. So it's good to have everyone together.
So I don't know what you really take from the game. It's a non-D1. The Billikens do what they're supposed to do, and they score a bunch of points. They play really well. I guess for purpose of this conversation, probably a bigger picture. At the end of the day, they did what they were supposed to do yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I went into it, Matt, looking at, I just wanted to see the players. You know, I just wanted to see guys play. I wanted to see what they look like moving around. And I got a nice the opportunity to do that, knowing going in that they're playing Abilene University, a team from Kansas City that is an NAIA school, that the only reason that they were in the game is because they saw that SLU had gotten Robbie Avila. And I mean, that's it. I mean, that's really the reason, is they thought it'd be kind of funny. And so they reached out to SLU, and they ended up getting the connection with a couple of their coaches. Josh Schertz said yes, and it turned out to be the home opener. And Avila is, you know, what it is. I mean, it's an NAIA school. They love playing hoops there outside of Kansas City. But, you know, it's a program still trying to figure it out. And they came out and actually played with a ton of energy. And at one point, it's a 19-18 game. But SLU is bigger and deeper and stronger and just better players. And just over time, they wore them out. But over that time, I got a chance to see a lot of different players. And that's what I was hoping to see. With Robbie out, and that's unfortunate that he has his injury, and he's going to be out for, I would say, probably a few more weeks. I mean, it's probably going to be another month, I would say, just like the first time he sprained his ankle. So you the silver lining is you see who is going to have to step up while he's out. And I got a chance to see a lot of different guys. So that's what I wanted. I know what Gibson Jimerson can do, and he starts knocking down threes. I know what Isaiah Swope can do. he starts shooting threes. He missed a bunch of them, but, you know, I've seen him play. What I wanted to see was Amari McCautry, their freshman point guard who has good size. I wanted to see A.J. Casey, their transfer from Miami. I wanted to see what Anya is all about, having watched him on TV in the Santa Clara game. Big guy, certainly has some promise there in the post, and things like that. So it was an opportunity for me to get eyeballs on these players.
It's a bummer, obviously, that that Robbie Avila is not there here at the beginning of the season. But I guess if you're looking for a silver lining, if you're going to have a 3 to 4 week injury, you would much rather it happen in November than in January, February, and obviously March.
Without question. And, you know, you want to have him prepped for the A-10 schedule. Unfortunately, you know, they have some opportunities here in the non-conference, that some good wins that could help them come tournament time if they need them. One of them was missed there in Santa Clara, and if he continues to play in that game, who knows? I mean, they were right there with Santa Clara. Santa Clara is a good team. They're going to win a lot of games this year, and so a win against them would have helped. A loss doesn't necessarily hurt you because, they're, like I said, they're going to win a lot. But they have some games here coming up. I think the Loyola Marymount game this Saturday could have used them. The game against San Francisco, Wichita State. I mean, there's some games that he's going to miss, I'm assuming, with this injury, that you could use him. But like you said, it is, the timing of it doesn't absolutely kill you. And you do get a chance to get some players in that lineup. McCautry is the one who got to be in this lineup because I figure they're going to play Anya. They're going to play Swope. They're going to play Jimerson. They're going to play Thames. And Hughes was coming off the bench, but I got a chance to see what McCautry can do as a point guard. Big guy, can absolutely dish and do a lot of different things. So that was an opportunity for him and for me to be able to see him. And I think the same thing, Josh Schertz has, I think at this point, an opportunity to figure out who his 5, 6, 7, 8th man, you know, who they are going to be. He's going to try to get some players to step up. He's not going to play 10 players in a game during this season. It's going to be 8 at the most. That's how he likes it. At Indiana State, I watched and called a lot of his games. He would play 7 players. You know, he would bring one or two guys off the bench and ride his starters. So who is that rotation and what kind of chemistry will they have? So without Robbie Avila, you will figure that out, and you know, it's important. It's important right now this time of year to get some sort of chemistry developing within this offense.
We're talking with GameLex sports director and TV voice of the Billikens, Tom Ackerman. This first 4 games of the season, so essentially the first month of the year, they're basically playing 1 game a week. And a lot of teams play 2 games a week to start out the season during the non-conference. That means they're getting a lot of practice time with some games in between. As Coach Schertz puts together a group, some of his former players, some Billikens former players, and another group of players that have just come into the program from elsewhere, is it good that they've got all this practice time in the first month of the season?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, I think it is. They want to be able to spend some time together and really work this out. I mean, he worked him pretty hard before Santa Clara, got him practicing on consecutive days and just getting into a routine together. So yes, it is very important to have a lot of practice time. And I think this week you're able to not only get in the routine of being on campus and getting your classwork done, going to practice, et cetera. But you got a big game coming up. I mean, Loyola Marymount's going to be a lot different than Avila. So you know, they will have a challenge on their hands on Saturday. And so it's a nice way to get yourself your scout, get yourself settled. Who are you going to be playing against? What does this video look like? You're not rushing. You know, and there will be time for that as the season starts to ramp up a little bit. You get into conference play, might be moving a little bit faster on you. Well, you know, by the time you get to March, you're going to have to be a tournament ready team. So you're going to have to play every day in a tournament or every other day. Well, every other day in some cases, or every day in others. And so it's going to be a ramp up for them all season long, without question.
Final thing on the Billikens for you. Gibson Jimerson played well. You said it earlier. We know who he is. We know what he can do. But he's also a guy who's been at SLU for a really long time playing in one system, and now he moves into a new system. Can you speak to the challenge that it is for a guy like that who has been doing it kind of one way for a while to continue to be successful but do it in a brand new system in his final year?
I think it's going to be a great benefit to him. I think that he played well under Travis Ford. But he was playing in a certain system, and he was the shooter. Everybody knew that Gibson was the guy that you had to pay attention to and guard. And I think he had some challenges in getting open without the ball. I think there was a lot of, you know, doubling, sometimes grabbing, just in general not allowing him to have much breathing room. I think that in this system, this actually really helps him out. He's smart. You know, he can figure it out. I don't know that it's that big of a hurdle for him, to be honest. I mean, I looked at him running in this offense from the first practice that they allowed us to watch, and he looked like he had it down already. And again, 60-year player. This guy's been playing college basketball since before the pandemic. I mean, I wonder how many teammates he's had and how much experience he has. He had options. He could have gone to other places. He believed in what Schertz was selling him. And the biggest thing of all is Gibson's going to get open. He's going to have open three-point looks. What happened last night was Avila was collapsing in the paint and not allowing SLU to attack with some of their bigger bodies. So guess what they did? They shot 41 threes. And Gibson fired off probably, I don't know, 18 of those and knocked down six, I think something like that. If I had to look at it, maybe 6 of 16, something like that, 6 of 15. So he knocks down six threes, you know, get used to that. I mean, he's going to be having the green light more than ever. So I think it's actually enticing to him, maybe more than he's ever had. And by the way, there are other players who benefit from that as well. I mean, Isaiah Swope's going to shoot and shoot and shoot no matter what team he's on, but he loves the system. Avila can shoot threes. And then you turn to Larry Hughes. Hughes knocks down five threes yesterday against Avila. And, you know, these players, I think, are really going to have a lot of fun with it. The only problem that SLU will run into, and we saw it in the Santa Clara game, is if they face a team that is taller and perhaps more athletic than they are. They are athletic, but they, you know, that Santa Clara team can get up and down the floor, and they had some height. And I think that SLU struggled with that a little bit. So maybe in the A-10, you know, they're really going to have to run that offense to perfection to keep up with some of these bigger, stronger teams. But they'll be able to hold their own, and I think that Jimerson will be the X factor. You know, he goes off for 28 or 30 against somebody like he did yesterday. And I know it's Avila, but it doesn't matter. I mean, he gets open looks and knocks him down. They're going to be tough to handle. They are going to be tough to handle. I think SLU's got some big days ahead.
We'll continue to plug what's going to be coming up later on today and every day at noon. Tom, you, me, Kevin Wheeler, Bernie Miklas get together each day for the Gas House Gang. Monday, it's all four of us. Tuesday through Friday, it's a combination of two of us. And it's been a lot of fun getting this thing started. We focus on the Cardinals, get into a few other things as well. Today on a Cardinals Monday, we did 45 minutes, nothing but Cardinals. And it always feels like it gets done, and we could have just kept going forever and ever.
I agree. You know, there's so much that you can talk about that today our angle was kind of if they make all of these trades, if they start to lose some of these established pieces, who steps up? And I love that conversation today. So, you know, we talked about, okay, if Helsley and Kittredge are gone, who closes? Who sets up? What are the options? If Arenado is gone, who plays third? Who plays second? You know, what does the Cardinals look in 25, and is there a chance that they could be better than last year? And if that is the case, who has to step up? Well, the young players, okay? Who are the young players? Who needs to be better? Who needs to blossom? And what are they forgetting? And, you know, all these things, you know, or who are we forgetting, I should say? And, you know, the name was brought up, Victor Scott. These kinds of conversations are a lot of fun, and I think that for Cardinals fans, it's a great thing to have it every day at noon that you can rely on baseball talk, especially Monday. Now, on other days, like tomorrow, Kevin Wheeler and I, you know we're going to talk college football. We're going to have some other topics as well, but there will always be baseball. So there's many sports options around. We all know that with the click of a mouse, or you can watch something on your phone. But nobody's doing Cardinal baseball every day like we are. And I think that that is very, very enticing for our unbelievable fans who have leaned on KMOX for years to do that very thing. So why not deliver?
100%. Tom Ackerman is the KMOX sports director. You hear him on Total Information AM every weekday morning. And he's now the TV voice of St. Louis University Billikens basketball on FanDuel Sports Network Midwest. Tom, as always, appreciate the time. And we'll talk to you later on this week during the Gas House game.
Buddy, I appreciate it very much. Have a great rest of the show, and thanks for having me.
Tom Ackerman joining us here on the program. We appreciate him taking a few moments with us, talking mostly SLU Billikens basketball. He is the TV voice now of the Billikens. We will take a break and have more in just a moment as we'll wrap things up after this. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.